Okay, this we're running out of time. We have around 24 hours. It'll be time to light candles, right? No more eating. Take off your shoes. Put on non-leather, and Yom Kippur will begin. And right now we're in the ninth. Are we in the ninth right now? Right now we're in the eighth. Still, we're going to get to the ninth day. Very little bit of the 10 days of Tshuva, and then Yom Kippur is the 10th day. And this is something which is so simple, it's almost, I would call it, it's axiomatic. You ask people, what are the 10 days of Tshuva? So they'll tell you it's the time between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and these are the holy days of the year. This is a time when God is particularly close. And I want to try to, and this is a time for forgiveness. I want to try to raise maybe three questions, which are all interrelated. One, what is the connection between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? And you're going to now tell me, well, the connection is that, I don't know, what will you tell me? What's the connection to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Or for that matter, is there any kind of organic connection? So you'll say, oh no, this is the first and this is the last of the 10 days of Tshuva. So I can say, well, you know, I could have said that it starts with Yom Kippur and ends with Rosh Hashanah, and there's 350-something days between the two. Why do I see a connection between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? And I know that that question did not sound very good to you, but I'll make it sound a little better as I continue. Why is this a time of tshuva? Why is this a time when God is close? Why is this a time of repentance? Which means all of these questions, I know, just seem simple, maybe too simple, but you know, job of a rabbi is to make something really simple seem complicated. So, and I'm a very good rabbi, so I will make it sound very complicated.
I agree with you.
That I'll make it sound very complicated. Okay, the first part. So let's now understand. When was the first Rosh Hashanah?
Adam,
good. When was the first Yom Kippur? That's a harder question, because as confident as you were in the first answer, is as unconfident you are in that second answer. And I saw the weakness. I saw it right there, all over you. It's okay. But no, it was good because you were so sure of that first part. But then once you already were speaking, then you were on a roll, so you had to give the second answer. But your body language just said, "I hope he doesn't make fun of me." But I did. So, when was the first Yom Kippur? So if you say Adam, that's very good. We just don't have any kind of evidence whatsoever there is. Yes?
When we got the Torah.
When we got the Torah. And why would you say that?
Because, I guess, that's when we got the laws of Yom Kippur. That's when we got the Torah. That's when we got the guide for life. And that's when we started following.
Give me a date.
I don't know.
Okay, yes.
Did it come after Purim?
No. So, you started well today, by the way. You did start well. But you'll have a chance to come back soon. Now, when you say when we got the Torah, so the Jews stood at Mount Sinai and God spoke, and right, is that what you meant by getting the Torah? Then Moshe comes up and he comes down and Moshe has the Ten Commandments with him. Is that what you mean by getting the Torah?
Yeah.
Okay, good. When Moshe comes down from the mountain, there is no reference in the Torah from the beginning, from the first verse, till the verse that Moshe comes down, there's no reference to Yom Kippur. None whatsoever. The first reference we find to Yom Kippur is only subsequent to Moshe coming down. But when Moshe came down, something really bad happened. And what was that? The Jews were busy. What were they busy with? Golden calf. See, now you guys are doing well. You get to the parts that has to do with partying, and then you're right there. Okay, good. So the golden calf. Now, that was a good thing or that was a bad thing? Okay, good. I just want to see who I'm talking to. So it was good and bad. Okay, what about it was good?
Because he broke the tablets, and Hashem said, it's good that you broke the tablets, like this, and I can make a new one better and revised.
All things considered, was it a good thing or a bad thing that the Jews sinned?
I was told that everything good happens is good, everything bad that happens is good.
Well, then I guess everything is good. But It was not a good thing. It could be that good came out of it. No, no, your point is correct, that it could be that something good comes out of it, but it was not a good thing. The sin of the golden calf was not a good thing. A matter of fact, that God was ready to destroy the entire Jewish people, and maybe then a new people would have come out, and that would have been good, but it was not good. Moshe then prays for our continued existence as a people. God invites Moshe to come up to the mountain the second time. What day does he come up? The first day of Elul. Moshe's then up again for 40 days and 40 nights. And when he comes down, when does he come down? Which day is it that he comes down? Yom Kippur. So therefore, the first Yom Kippur is the day that the Jews were forgiven for the sin of the golden calf. And therefore, what is Yom Kippur? It's a day of forgiveness. What did they sin with in the golden calf? It says that they ate and they drank and they made merry. Actually, it says that an orgy broke out of the very foot of the mountain. They were guilty of all kinds of sins. What do we do in Yom Kippur? We don't eat, we don't drink, you don't have sexual relations, which means the very laws of Yom Kippur are a reflection of the sins that the Jews did when they made the golden calf. The things which they did in the golden calf are the things that we can't do in Yom Kippur. So that first Yom Kippur, what happened? The first Yom Kippur is around a half a year after the Jews left Egypt. Moses goes to the mountain. God gives forgiveness. And the fact that God gave us forgiveness on that day made it a day of forgiveness forever. And then subsequently in the Torah, God tells Moshe, this is what you should do on Yom Kippur in order to get forgiveness in subsequent years. So now this date of forgiveness, it's the day that we made up with God. Any of you ever have a girlfriend? You ever get into a fight? You ever make up? You can say making up is better than, right? This is the day we made up. This is the, but it's even better than making up. This is the day that God forgave us. He says, okay, we're good. So God says, every single year on this day, you do the right things, you say the right things, I will forgive you on this day. So now, how many days were there between the first Rosh Hashanah and the first Yom Kippur?
10, 40.
How many days were there between the first Rosh Hashanah and the first Yom Kippur? Excellent. There's around 2,000, right? 2,400 years times how many days that were. So now, again, I have to ask you, so what are these 10 days of repentance? A matter of fact...
10 days of repentance, 10 days, from 10 generations from Adam to Noah.
That's good, but that's irrelevant. There are lots of tens out there, but when Moses goes up, he's up there for 40 days. Where are the 10 days? 40 days. Again, I can understand people, and this is the Sephardic custom, of starting to say Selichot from the first day of Elul all the way through to Yom Kippur. Why is that the custom? Because those are the days that Moses was up on the mountain and he was praying, and those are the days that God ended up forgiving the people. These are days of prayer. Why are there 10 days of Tshuva? So you'll say, oh no, these are the 10 days in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And again, I'm now going to ask you, so I told you, I made something very simple, complicated now. So again, I'm going to ask you, so what is the organic connection between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Is there any kind of organic connection between the two? And now you're stuck because you have no idea what the answer is. Right? Right. So, let's see if we can nonetheless try to make any kind of sense of this. Does anybody know what the reason was, if there is a reason, if you could point your finger in one direction, what the reason was for the Jews sinning by the golden calf? They were confused. All sin, by the way, is born of confusion. All sin takes place because of confusion. I'm confused, I think this will make me happy. I'm confused, I think this will do something for me. But that's where sin comes from. The first sin in the history of the world was which sin? The sin of? Of eating from the tree. What was the tree? The tree of?
Knowledge.
Tree of knowledge. No, it was not the tree of knowledge. What was it? Good. The tree of knowledge of good and evil. It's not the tree of knowledge. It's the tree of knowledge of good and evil. What happens when you eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil? You get confused. You don't know what is good and what is evil. It's a tree of confusion. Right? It's a tree which confuses good and evil. Before they ate from that tree, they know what was good, they know what was bad. Now, we can justify the worst things that we do, we can justify them and think we're doing good things. Correct? And good things that are for us, we can justify and tell ourselves why we shouldn't be doing them. Why? Because we still suffer from confusion. You don't want to sin? get clarity. Once you have clarity, then you have a chance. If you don't have clarity in your life, then you have a very difficult time. So, why did the Jews sin by the golden calf? They were confused. And now, where do we see the confusion manifesting itself? Anybody have any kind of...
Egyptians.
Okay, you could say that the amount of time they spent in Egypt impacted them. What else? Was there any other... Yeah.
They thought Moses wasn't going down.
Good. Why? This is good. They miscounted. Now, that sounds like a real simple thing, because you talk about all kinds of confusion that people can make in the world. Counting seems real simple. It's mathematical. I mean, how difficult is it to count? It's hard to take off your shoes, right? I mean, counting is not, or should not be, all that difficult. They messed up with counting. They thought Moshe should be here already. He wasn't back yet. They got scared. And once they got scared, by the way, it's another great way to sin. Confusion, fright, depression, all these things are wonderful ways to get involved in sin. The person who's not scared, the person who's not confused, the person who's not depressed will have a harder time sinning. So first you have to work on those things. Get yourself depressed, confused, or scared, then you'll be able to sin. Okay? Just in case you... Ruth, you agree? Okay. Ruth agrees. We're good. Yeah? Okay. Okay, so I can stop now then. Okay, we should keep going then.
Moses had given them the number of days that he
would come back? Yeah, Moses said, I'll be down 40 days, right? So they miscounted as far as how you count the 40 days. So now he had to make up a new 40 days, but okay, so far we're good. Now, let me ask you another question. I know that you guys have enough questions already, but let me ask you another question. On Rosh Hashanah is the first day of the year. Right? It's the new year. So Rosh Hashanah, God pulls out all the accountants in heaven and he starts counting. Okay, we're back to counting again. God pulls out the accountants and starts counting. I mean, they're all working there with their machines and they're counting up and say, this guy, 50,000, right? 748 good things this year, 46,000 bad things. And God says, okay, I'm ready to commit in this guy another year of life. Right? Is that basically what happens, or am I simplifying things? But that's what happens. Right? So God goes and makes an accounting of every single person and essentially asks, is this person a good investment to keep in this world, or is this person already has outlived their use, and therefore this is a bad investment? So, if the accounting takes place on Rosh Hashanah, what are these 10 days for? Why do we have 10 more days?
Tshuva.
Right. So, why? These are 10 days of tshuva, but why? I mean...
Stability to change the decree.
Good. But why not just do all that the month beforehand? And again, now I'm asking the same question all over again. If God does judgment on Rosh Hashanah, so why are there another 10 days? And more than that, if I do something during these 10 days, why isn't this on next year's ledger? Why does this impact last year's ledger? By the way, in case you're not sure, that was a very good question. Should I say it again?
Yes.
I should say that about everything I say.
No.
Okay, but that was a good question. Again, the accounting for what I've done in the previous year will take place on Rosh Hashanah. Now you say, I got 10 more days to fix and to do and to all kinds of things. Guys will get up early and they'll learn more. I did that. I get up early. I've been getting up early every day. It's killing me. I even then said to a couple of guys, I said, would you be interested in a Gemara shiur and a Gemara class? And then like all these guys said, sure. So then I found myself teaching a Gemara class. But of course I did, because it's been Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Let's see if I do it next week again, okay? This will be the question. But it's after New Year's Day. If I do things these 10 days, how does it impact what I did previously? It's a new ledger. It's a new year. So that's what I said. That's a very good question, right? You want to answer, or should we just like stop here? Okay, we'll a little more?
A little more.
Okay. You guys are awake, so... We'll do more. So I'm going to tell you something which is a mystical tradition which apparently not that many people know. As a matter of fact, I saw an article last year by literally, I think I consider him to be the world's expert on Tanakh, the world's expert on the Torah. And I saw an article last year, and he said something very similar to the mystical thing I'm going to tell you, but he didn't know the mystical tradition.
What's his name?
Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun. And I called him up today, and I told him this, and he was very, very grateful that I told him this. So I'm not going to explain it to you completely, but he wrote me a letter already. He already sent me an email. He wanted me to see the source. I sent it to him. He already sent me an email. Thank you for the incredible treasure that you sent me. That was the letter that he wrote. Okay, you ready? The Vilna Gaon, who was one of the greatest rabbis who've ever lived, they claimed there was nothing in the revealed Torah or the Kabbalistic tradition that he didn't know. He literally had a photographic memory. He was something like Judaism's Mozart, where a genius from a very young age just knew all there was to know. And he says the following. He says, Rosh Hashanah is indeed the beginning of the new year, but Yom Kippur is the end of the previous year. Okay, hold it. You still with me? Did that mean anything to you so far or no? And he said that this comes as a partial reconciliation between the lunar year and the solar year. So, let me try to explain this.
Between the what year?
The lunar year and the solar year. So let me explain. Judaism. And you're going to get this wrong, so it's okay. Judaism, does it have lunar years or solar years?
Both.
No. There's only one choice left.
It's a lunar solar year.
No. Judaism has solar years, but it has lunar months.
Okay.
Is that fair? Or that
I knew there was both.
Right. No, there is a comment, but I didn't ask. If I would have asked... You gentlemen and ladies have to think with precision. If I would have asked, is the Jewish calendar based on the lunar or the solar, then the answer would have been both. I didn't ask that. I asked if the Jewish year is based upon the lunar or the solar. So the Jewish year is based upon the solar. If you want to insist both, it's okay. I was just wanted to make a point. But if the year was based exclusively on the lunar cycle, what would happen? There are how many lunar days in a year? 354. 12 months, 354 days. What happens every single year? Because the solar year has 364 to 365 days. Right? So there is going to be a 10-day discrepancy between the two. And therefore, every year we lose 10 days. So if you want to figure out on an average year, this year won't be an average year, you want to figure out an average year, if Passover came out April 15th one year, it would be a good guess it's going to come out around April 5th the following year. Okay? How simple? What's the simple math based on? So there's a 10-day discrepancy every single year. But if this would go unchecked forever, what would end up happening? The Passover, then the following year would be in March, and then the beginning of March, and then February, and so on. But no, we have solar years. But we only fix the solar years every 3 years, every 4 years or so, or I think the more precise number was 6 times in 19 years. And the way that they fix it, that's the cycle. We have a 19-year cycle with 6 times that we fix it in the 19 years. And the way that they fix it is they add an extra month. This winter, we're going to have an extra month, or early spring, late winter, extra month, which is Adar. We'll have a second month of Adar. And therefore, if last year Passover was April 5th, so this year it's going to end up being pushed off by almost would be pushed off by a month instead, ended up the other way, so it ended up being around 20 days later instead of 10 days earlier. Okay? Okay. Yes, sir. Exactly. The Muslim calendar is based exclusively on the lunar cycle and never has the solar aspect of it to fix it. The Gregorian calendar, which in case you don't know what that is, but that's the one that you've been growing up on, the Gregorian calendar is exclusively a solar calendar without any concern of the lunar cycles. Now, we're good now? So the Vilna Gaon said, yes?
Why is Judaism both?
Because it's more precise. Now, and the real reason, real deep philosophical and Kabbalistic things, which if you're nice, maybe I'll get to some of them. We'll see. Now, Rosh Hashanah, right? If I want to figure out next year what day Yom Kippur is, I look what day Rosh Hashanah was this year. Okay? So now say it again. Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the year, and Yom Kippur is the end of the year. Of course, Yom Kippur, right? One second. Did that sound deep to anybody here? What? So again, Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the new year, and Yom Kippur is the end of the previous year. So that's exactly the point. Where are we right now? That's really the question. Where are we right now? We are someplace in no man's land. Or if you really want to be more precise, right now, where are we in terms of the day and night? What time is it right now?
Twilight.
Right now we're in twilight. Twilight happens every day. The stars aren't out, yet the sun has set. So where are we? Are we in day or night? So what's the answer?
We don't know.
Dawn. So, by the way, there's a couple possibilities. Is twilight day? I can argue it's day because there's no stars. Is twilight night? I can argue that it's night because there's no sun. I could argue it's neither, and I can argue that it's both. Four possibilities. Which one do you like the most?
It's between the two. Exactly between the two.
So therefore, again, is it day? Is it night? Is it neither? Or is it both? Again, you can choose whichever one you like. Which answer do I like? I like both. I like both. Because... I like both, because there are aspects of day and there are aspects of night. There are certain things you can only do during the day that you can do during this time. There are certain things you do during the night that you can do during this time, which means that it is aspects of both day and night. If it was neither, then you couldn't do anything during this time. I'm talking religiously right now, in terms of certain prayers. I can daven my evening prayer right now already. Say, how can I daven the evening prayer? It's not night, but it's not day, so I can daven the evening prayer. On the other hand, if it's Shabbos, Shabbos isn't over yet. Why isn't it over yet? Because it's not night. But hold it. I just contradicted myself. So what's the answer? For Shabbos to be over, it needs to be completely night. Okay? And then Shabbos, so when it's completely night, but there's still... What's the problem? Because it's both. Twilight is both, day and night. What is this time between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? What is it? Now you understand something very deep now. What is it? Is it part of the new year or the old year? So what's the answer? It's twilight. We are right now in the twilight zone.
The twilight zone? We're in the
exactly. We are right now in the twilight zone.
This is the last twilight.
Okay, don't think too much. Exactly. We are right now in the twilight zone. But what is the twilight zone? So right now there should be really groovy music in the background. Right? But there is something about this time now which becomes very, very special. So again, let's try to think about this. Why do we have both a lunar and a solar calendar? And they're very, very different. They're very, very different, even though you can tell me that they parallel one another, but let's just think about how they're different. The sun rises and the sun sets every single day in the exact same way. It rises, it sets, it rises, it sets.
It's not the same way, because sunrise changes.
It changes ever so slightly.
Sometimes it's over there, sometimes it's over here.
But that takes a time. As it moves... It's almost imperceptible unless you chart the difference from one point to the next. But each day, you cannot see the difference. Over time, you can see the difference. The lunar cycle is a cycle in a relatively short amount of time. It changes every single day. You go from no moon to the slightest crescent of the new moon, going up till the middle of the month when you have the full moon, and then you move and it wanes and you get once again to no moon again. That's the lunar cycle. All the power of the lunar cycle comes from the sun.
I have a question.
Yeah. Well, if we, and by the way, if we don't get to anything deep now, it's going to be because of his question. Go ahead.
no pressure. How is it that so the whole world sees the moon and there's everything. So when
don't ask me such questions. Don't ask me such questions. This is like when you see the moon. The cycle of the moon is the same all over the world. Whether it's full moon, half moon, that's all over. That's universal. It's connected to the tides. It's connected to women's cycles. It's connected to all kinds of things, which I'm not going to get into right now. But there are times where the moon is full, and this is very interesting, because there's at least two Jewish holidays that are holidays when there's a full moon. Passover and Sukkot, when there's a full moon. Full moon is a time of revelation. Why do I call it a time of revelation? Because it's clear. It's you see the whole moon of it. It's being revealed. It's a time of revelation. What happens to the moon afterwards? It disappears. And what's that? That's a time of concealment. It's a time when things are being concealed, which means we move from concealment to revelation. So now it makes a lot of sense that we have major Jewish holidays at a time of revelation. We have one holiday which is at a time of concealment. And what's that? That's Rosh Hashanah. The Kesa, right? When things are hidden. Yeah.
Do we have Shavuot as well?
Shavuot's not a full moon. But Shavuot is a whole different issue which I cannot explain right now. So, what do we now know? We now know that there is this solar year, there's this lunar year. Lunar represents concealment, revelation, and I'm saying the same thing is true in a marriage. There's going to be a time when a couple are together, there's going to be a time that they need to be separate in terms of the Jewish laws of marriage. And it absolutely parallels the moon, but now we see that this is a spiritual thing which reflects the relationship between God and man as well. There's a time of revelation, a time of concealment. Now, when God created the world, and that's what Rosh Hashanah is about, when God created the world, is this a moment of revelation or is this a moment of concealment? Okay, it's the right answer. Why? Because the moon is not full then, so you know this. So you had to be. That had to be the right answer. Now, why? What
is
that? Good, very good. Olam is the same, Ayin, Lam, and Mem is the same letters as hidden. So why is creation related to being hidden? Because prior to creation, all there was one thing. And what's that? What? God. That's all there was. There was no time, there was no space, there was no matter. All there was God. How does creation take place? When God hides. God hides and creates something else. What happens as a result of God creating something else? Now there's a possibility for something to happen. And what is that? Sin. Now you can say to me, hold it, what's the connection over here? If God is hidden, then sin is possible. If God were not hidden, sin would not be possible. If God were completely manifest, as bright as the sun, staring right at us, we could not sin. Confusion would not take place. Depression would not take place. Correct? What was the third one? We must have written it down. Fear would not take place. We would feel wrapped up in the warmth of God as a child being held in its mother's arms. Sin would be the furthest thing in our minds. We would feel so good about ourselves. So what happens? God creates. Part of creation is creating a possibility of separation. And this is also part of raising children. At some point, you need to raise children to be independent. It's very important. The parents who can't allow their children independence end up squashing those children. You need to give them independence. But when they become, when you give them independence, you give them space, they're going to make mistakes. They're going to take advantage. They're going to mess up. But it's a natural part of creation. If God did not give us independence, his being would be so overwhelming that we wouldn't be able to sin. But we also wouldn't have free will. We also wouldn't be independent beings. So creation takes place when God hides. And that's the creation of this world. And that's why the word world and the word hidden is the same thing. And that's why creation takes place not during a full moon. Everything is hidden. And now sin is possible. Okay? We're... The lunar year is based upon this process of concealment, revelation. And I want you to appreciate that's what our lives are as Jews. That is the Jewish experience. Our experience is that there are times that we will feel God involved in history, and there are times that we feel that God abandoned us. And what do we need to do? We need to think globally instead of thinking, the Hebrew word is nekudatit, I forgot even how you say this in English, it's instead of thinking in a micro fashion. What do I mean by thinking globally? If I say, sometimes God is right there involved in history. You know, if somebody never heard of the Six-Day War, and you explain to them the Six-Day War, in 6 days, this band of Jews defeated all these Arab countries. In the first half an hour of war, we defeated the Egyptian Air Force. So if you told this to somebody, what would they say? Oh, this sounds like one of these biblical stories. Well, guess what? I guess it's an indication that biblical stories are true. Because this is something which took place within my lifetime. There was a time, the Six-Day War, and there are other times, that God was involved in history. It was manifest. It was bright. We felt God. Somebody who was an adult at the time, I was a child, I was in first grade during the Six-Day War. Somebody who was an adult at the time told me that 2 weeks later, they opened up the Kotel for the first time. And he said to me, they opened up the gates to the old city at 10 o'clock that morning. It was Shavuos morning. They opened up the gates. And he said to me that most of the people there thought the Messiah would come at any second. It was just this feeling of unity and this feeling that God was with them. And they just felt, okay, that has to be the next step. There are times that we feel that God abandoned us. The Holocaust is a time we feel God abandoned us. Now, when I say you need to think in a global way, what do I mean by that? I can just focus on the times that I don't see God and say, well, there must not be a God. I say, no, think globally. Realize there are times that where there's revelation and there's times where there are concealment. You know, in a marriage, and I use this metaphor along the way, in a marriage there are times that a couple are allowed to be together, and this is connected to the woman's menstrual cycle. There are times that they can be together physically and there are times they need to be separate physically. So what do you think a husband should do during a time that he can't be physically together with his wife? Go look for someone else? I'm being serious. What should the husband do at that time? Okay, this is a time of concealment.
How long?
This is that's the negotiation here? Let's say 2 weeks. Let's say 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off, just like the moon. 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off. So that's a great question. So good. Now you know what to pray for in Yom Kippur. God, I don't want any more concealment. But when a couple has 2 weeks of concealment, so how should they feel about one another? Should they still feel the other one loves them even though they can't show it physically? Or should they feel at this point, well, you know, I'm not so sure? Of course they should. Which means the times of concealment are the times that we can build the greatest type of connection. Okay? Rosh Hashanah represents creation. Creation is concealment. That's the lunar year. That's the lunar cycle. The solar cycle, it's much more, what should the word be? You get more immediate gratification. Every night when you go to sleep, have you ever been scared the sun won't come up in the morning? No. You embrace the night. Time to rest, unless you're from certain places, then it's time to party. But it's a time to rest. I'm talking about normal people. It's a time to rest. Gets a little dark. By the way, you get a little depressed when it gets dark. Gets a little dark. You get a little tired. You close your eyes, you go to sleep, you open up your eyes, and you see the first rays of sun. And how do you feel in the morning, the first rays of sun? It's a new day, you feel good, you're ready to get up, you're ready to face the world. We get immediate gratification when it comes to the whole solar experience. The sun goes down and the sun goes up. The solar year is 365 days. The lunar year is 354 days. The year begins on Rosh Hashanah. The year ends on Yom Kippur. These days in between are days of twilight. What are they? Are they the next year or the previous year? They're twilight. It's part of the previous year because Yom Kippur hasn't come yet. It's part of the next year because Rosh Hashanah has already come. Which means these are days, you ready? These are days which in a sense transcend time. That's what I mean by the twilight. They transcend the normal definitions. And once they transcend time, we're in a whole different place. And I'm going to go back and remind you something that I said a couple minutes ago. Before God created, there was no time and there was no space and there was no matter. What was there? There was just God. Which means before God created, all that there was God. These 10 days are connected to the time before God created. These 10 days transcend normal definitions of time, and therefore these 10 days represent when God is right here. So if God is right here, I can pray for anything, but something else happens also. Repentance is logically impossible. Why? I did something yesterday. I feel bad today. Did I still do it yesterday? Does the fact that I feel bad today in any way impact that I did that yesterday? No, I did it. But what happens when I'm in a 10-day twilight zone where time doesn't make sense anymore? And instead of time making sense and flowing in the normal way, I am standing right in front of God during this time. God exists outside of time, space, and matter. During these 10 days, I am hanging with God outside of time. I'm transcending time. I'm in the twilight zone. God is right here. If God is right here and there's no past, there's no present, there's no future, for God there is no past, present, and future. So now what happens to what happened in the past? It's irrelevant. The only reality is my standing in front of God right now. And that's the incredible power of these 10 days. I'm with God. God's right here. This is a time where the normal rules of time don't work. Why did we sin? We got confused. What happened? We got confused? We miscounted time. So now God gave us a way of not only being forgiven, God gave us a way of just ignoring time completely, again, in a certain sense, and realizing that this is the time that will reconcile the solar and the lunar. This is the time where the idea of the lunar, which is based upon what? On God's being hidden, is being fixed and reconciled with the solar, which is the sun coming up every single day. Which means there's going to be a revelation over here, even though the starting point was one of concealment. The revelation is God being right here. But that, in a sense, is up to us. We need to be able to hold on to this time. We need to be able to feel God standing in front of us. We need to appreciate we're dealing with something which is completely metaphysical. And when we understand that God is right here in front of us, and this is a time that we can grab onto it, and this is a time that we can have a revelation, then this becomes a time that I can say to God, forgive me for what I've done. And suddenly the past is irrelevant because I'm existing outside of time, standing in front of God in a time where it's a time of tikkun, of fixing. What are we fixing during this time? So now on the simple level, what are we fixing? We're fixing the lunar year, fixing it together with the solar year. But what else are we fixing? Everything. We can fix absolutely every single thing in the world during these 10 days. Could we do it other times? Sure, but it's a little bit harder. These 10 days are times, and now we're getting towards the end of twilight, and we're getting to the dark. But it's not just today we're getting to the end of the twilight. We're getting to the end of the twilight of these 10 days. So time is running out. You guys have to go. We all have to go. And use this time as best as possible and fix everything that we can and realize that this is the time that God is right in front of us. Everybody have a Gemara Chasima Tova.
Is there a specific
specific time in which God makes a decision for each person, like the counting?
The holiest time of Yom Kippur.
Is each person different? Like, for the 10 days, I know he'll judge each person.
No, I won't say it different, but I'm saying the holiest time of Yom Kippur is the very, very end, when you get to twilight. That's going to be the holiest time.
When, like, today or tomorrow?
On Saturday, on Shabbos. That Shabbos will be Yom Kippur. When you get to the twilight, to the very end, that's the holiest time. That's when the doors get shut, because after that, we go back to normal again. Use the opportunity, use Yom Kippur, and God willing, we can fix everything.